Welcome to another episode of GEQ Speaks, your go-to platform for insightful conversations, captivating stories, and thought-provoking discussions. GEQ is a series of experiences, and we're just making sense of that as we go along. That is what we're doing here, one conversation at a time. So sit back, relax, and let's dive into our episode.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's special edition of our podcast. This is Reina, and I'm delighted to have two of our Georgetown University students here with us who have completed their semester abroad. I'm joined today by Carlo, who spent a semester at Georgetown's main campus in Washington, D.C., and Fatima, who studied at Georgetown Villa in Italy. So both of you, welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Beyonce, if you're listening. Hi. Okay, sorry. I thought it was an impromptu audition.
So let's start with you, Carlo. What inspired you to choose DC campus for your study abroad?
For me, I think what inspired me to go to DC was it's just the natural place for me given my interests. A lot of the classes available in Washington, DC are policy oriented, foreign policy, security, something that sadly are lacking in this campus, although Georgetown Qatar is working on it now. Yeah, that's pretty much what inspired me to go for DC over Italy.
Right. And what about you, Fatma? Turning to you, what attracted you to the Villa in Italy?
For me, it was just like I stumbled into it. It was not my intention to study abroad in Italy. It wasn't possible before my year, so no one had done it from what I understood. But in my time, guys, like in the olden days, you had to apply to study abroad, and only 15 people every semester could go to study abroad. And I tried to go study abroad in DC, and I tried to go study abroad in DC twice, and I got rejected twice. Ooh.
Right.
So I applied. to study abroad in Italy. I was like, you know what? If I get it, then destiny is telling me to go to Florence, and destiny chose Florence, and so I went to Florence.
Honestly, I mean, in my freshman year, that was the case as well. Thankfully, not as a sophomore. All I had to do was fill out an application when I wanted to go. But seeing really everyone in your batch get rejected, I was like, you know what? I'm going to apply to Italy. Mm-hmm. But no, I applied to DC instead. Okay. Okay. So now I'd love for you both to walk us through a typical day in your life. So during your study abroad, what did you guys do?
Fatima, you...
Yeah, I don't mind starting. So we were lodged. So the villa is in a hillside town next to Florence called Fiesole. But we were lodged in a hotel, a student hotel in Florence. So typical morning, I wake up. We had single rooms. Not to brag or anything to these people. I wake up, I get ready. We go downstairs. We had like a Georgetown sort of breakfast thing together. Every weekday morning, we had a shuttle that left once every day to take us from Florence, where we were living, to Fiesole, where the villa is. So we take the shuttle together. Being me, sometimes I do miss the shuttle. So there's a bus. So you could just take like the regular public Florence public transport system to the villa. The villa is up a hill, so you walk up the hill. And then you're met with the most beautiful view of Florence from atop the hill at the villa. And then we take our classes at the villa, and we have lunch together catered there at the venue. And after your last class for the day, you take the public bus back to the hotel or into the city, Florence, depending on what you wanted to do for the rest of the evening. So we really just got to live in the city, and we only went to the villa for classes and lunch during the weekdays.
Okay, rumor or not, do you guys have like a private Italian chef who cooks for you? Because I heard that, but I don't know if it's true.
Yes.
Really? Okay.
I don't know if it's a chef, but there's a team that makes lunch every day at the villa, every weekday at the villa. So if you wanted to eat lunch at the villa, even if you didn't have class, you would go to the villa just for lunch.
And how did it feel like attending classes inside a villa, right? So you're not in a traditional classroom. Mm. Did it feel the same, or was Did you feel like you were on holiday?
So I did feel like I was on holiday during the study abroad, but it wasn't because of the villa. I think the villa has been converted to host classes for a very long time. So they do have some traditional classrooms in there. Although sometimes it was kind of crazy going to the restroom and then like seeing the Duomo in Florence from the window. I'm like, what is this hallucination? But it did very much feel like classes. But at the same time, it did feel like a holiday because, you know, like just Italy and everywhere is so pretty. And a lot of our classes were very experiential. So I took two history classes, history of modern Italy and then history of early Europe. And oftentimes we take classes and then the following week we just take excursions. Like we'll speak about the Renaissance and then the next week we're going to a cathedral that has the tomb of like Donatello or like Galileo. We're going to Rome to see the Sistine Chapel by ourselves. So I did feel like I was learning, but it was a very experiential based kind of learning as opposed mm-hmm. to what we tend to do here that is more theory dense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, I see. Thank you, Fatma, for that. And what about you, Carlo? Can you like walk us through a day in your life?
Okay. I've seen, just before I start, I've seen the schedules of some of my friends who are coming this semester, and I would say mine was a little bit different. I plan my day out to be stretched. It's not like I have classes back to back, as the case here in Doha. So I would have class at 10 in the morning to like 11:15, 11:30. Then I would have a break up until like 4 or like sometimes even 6. So like, I pretty had a long day, but I only have two classes on a day on average. But yeah, just about a day, a typical day would look like I would wake up, go to Leo's, which is the main dining hall on main campus. I would go down to the main area because that place pretty much has a lot of like restaurants. It's like a food court, but down like the one in the basement floor, it's the main one. You can have a buffet there for breakfast. One thing that I loved the most about there was during the days they would serve this thing called the cinnamon toast sticks. It's like bread coated with cinnamon and sugar. I loved it. Plus, going for the cereals section, I loved cinnamon toast crunch. I only figured out those cereals when I arrived there. After that, I would like go back to my dorm room. We didn't have our solo dorms, but I would say I'm one of the lucky ones because we got one of the lofted apartments at the VCW. Okay. So, and it was like a room for four, but we only had three people in it. So we each have our own space. So like there was a little bit of privacy there too. And then when I would go to classes, one thing different about the main campus in Doha is that it's Doha is just packed in one place. It's very small. You can go to class like 5 minutes before the time.
Right.
This is still possible in DC, but the thing is you need to be able to run fast. You need to run or walk fast. But sometimes it's not, because like sometimes there are classrooms located two blocks outside of the gate. So you mm-hmm. need to give yourself like 15 minutes before class to make there in time. Right. Sometimes during the day there, or roughly around noon, there were these things called the coffee chats with the SFS dean, or sometimes with a professor from the SFS. They would be bringing guests from around the world or just within the US.
That's nice.
Not just politicians, like business leaders, thought leaders, you name it. You could go there and it's like an hour session. The host and the guest would be talking for like 20 minutes, and then the remaining 40 minutes would be just students asking questions. That's right. One of the things I loved the most. And then I would go to my classes. I took some classes that are the typical Georgetown Qatar classes. Some of my course, like the history, quant, but there are like some of my electives, that's when I enjoyed the most, because a lot of the professors that were teaching them are professionals in the field, or like with teaching as a side job. Like one of the classes that was remarkable for me was this class called Foundation of Grand Strategy. There were two professors in it, John McNeil, a historian and Charles Skupchin, a political scientist who was one of who was part of the National Security Council during Obama. So you would have them talk about grand strategy, one from a historical perspective and another one from a policy-wise perspective. That was, it was a tough class for me, but I would say that was one of the classes that I actually got to learn a lot of things that's practical in real life.
I feel like now you touched on another question that I had, but so we're going to put that on the side. Guys, real, like a very, very quick question. There's a running joke in my friend group that at Georgetown campus in Qatar, you don't really have to like buy any food because there's always events. So there's always extra free food. Was that the same case in like the campuses abroad?
I can tell you that that was not the case in Italy. If you want free food, don't come. We did have the breakfast, yeah. But that was at least when I went again. I think the arrangements might have changed, so we're gonna need maybe update the episode. But when I went, we had the breakfast only on the weekdays, in the mornings of the weekdays, and then we had the lunch only in the afternoons of the weekdays because those were the only days that we had classes at the villa.
Right.
But every day dinner was your responsibility to figure out. And if you didn't go to campus as well, that means lunch was also your responsibility to figure out. But there was a kitchen at the hotel. You could go in, shop for food.
Okay.
In Italy, there's a, you know, there's like a strong eating out culture as well. So like people go out at night to get some pizza, just order food. If you do drink and you like to drink, like, you know, Europeans...
Right, notorious for that, right.
And it's very available and it's not expensive. So I would say many of my friends spent a lot of their evenings just trying out different restaurants in Florence. I, too, was part of those people for a while. And then my bank account was like,
Was it expensive?
Nothing crazy. Like, you could... not expensive, but not sustainable as a long-term habit. Like, unless, of course... that's part of your plan to spend that money to really savour the eating out experience. At some point, you're going to need to be like, okay, give me that pan. There's rice at home. You know what I mean? So like everything in moderation, at least for me.
But I mean, like for a little splurge, it's fine. Yeah. Every now and then.
And it doesn't always feel like a splurge. Again, it's not crazy prices. It's like decent places, yeah.
Unlike DC, I heard that there's not only obviously the taxes, but there's a DC tax on top of that. Carlo, what happened?
So yeah, there's multiple taxes in the US just in general. But just to talk about like my experience on campus. So there's free food with coats. Free food in a sense that you already have a meal plan, it's covered. So your meal plan basically has two things. One is the swipes. That's 14 a week for me at least that I could get for buffets or at Leo's or at Epi's. Or at some of the restaurants around campus. Another thing is like flex dollars, which is like a lump sum money that you can spend throughout the semester. That's what I used a lot. That's what I used for food. For lunch mostly. I would go to Chick-fil-A.
How did that taste?
I just tasted. I just ate chicken nuggets every single look. For every lunch, I love the sauce though. So if you're gonna go there, try to eat it with the sauce always.
Yeah, I hear the sauce is great.
If you eat it without the sauce, it doesn't really taste that much good. Oh. So yeah, but about the free food culture, there are free food events there. One thing that I recall was the Arab Study Center or the basically the New York. The Arab, the Persian department, they would always toast a lunch. It's not really a full lunch. It's just like kunafas and karak. On the first Monday of each month, I think, if I recall. It wasn't the fanciest as we would like go here.
Right.
Same thing goes for the other events that I've been to. Most of the time you get coffee at least, or sometimes pizza, but the pizza there isn't really the, like, it's probably like, on the low tier of average of on the low tier of like the pizza rankings that I have. As for the food eating out, yes, I started getting I started hating some of the foods because it gotten Like, I've eaten a lot of it. I don't want to eat more of it.
Right.
So I would go to some of the restaurants around town. Some of them are expensive. Some of them are just some of them are just affordable enough. But the thing is, so you have those taxes. So you have the federal tax. You have the state tax, like the state or city tax, depending where you whether eat in DC right. or in Virginia or Maryland. You have those two things on top of the price you're paying for the food. Then there's also the tip.
That just processed in my head.
So yeah, that's like, I mean, you could press the button once you pay, but
still, everyone's like, gonna give you dirty looks though.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I think the minimum there that's expected of you is 15, because just about, we're talking about food, when you're ordering out, you need to put the tip already before you get it. And I recall this one time, my friend and I, we ordered food roughly at the same time. I put 15% already on top of it. My friend didn't. No tip at all. My food arrived. His was like canceled. So eventually he had to reorder the food, put like 10% in. But the thing is, somebody took it. Somebody was like, okay, I'm going to take your order. But the thing is, like, the restaurant closed already. So eventually That's they didn't insane. Close. Oh, and yeah, the food places there. Whereas we're used to living in Qatar where things open up pretty late at night, roughly at 11. A lot of the places in DC close at like 7 or 8. Like the latest that you could get is like 10 p.m. So
right.
you need to take that into account when you're eating out late at night. So
that's interesting. But guys, now let's delve into something a bit more personal. Could you share any cultural shocks or differences that significantly affected your daily interaction with the locals?
Guys, first of all, I'd say something that I wish I did more was to interact with the... I feel like I was very much in the American study abroad bubble.
Right.
Florence is full of study abroad kids. The hotel I was staying is full of study abroad kids. So when we'd go out in the evenings, study abroad kids.
That says a lot. Like, no need to expand.
But I was, as a Muslim woman, I was also very conscious of like the rising sort of anti-Islamic sentiments in Europe. I'm also Nigerian,
right?
And if you don't know something about Nigerian women in Italy, there's a long tradition of Nigerian women being trafficked to Italy or just migrating to Italy to join the sex trade industry.
Right.
It's quite a reputation there. So I was like, that's an interesting intersection of identities to have in this country. And I was sort of worried that that would affect my interactions. But luckily, I'd say I didn't have anything explicit towards me that seemed to come from that sort of place. Or you're a Muslim. First of all, I don't think I present as Muslim, because right. I do not use the hijab, which is something I say it's a privilege for me as a Muslim woman who doesn't have to be publicly identifiable as a Muslim woman right. in a place where that might not be safe. And then in terms of sort of the Nigerian-ness, I feel like being in the study abroad kids bubble sort of protected me from that, because I think when you're of a certain class, or if you present as a certain class, or you have a certain accent, that doesn't make particularly mark you as African or someone who works in a particular industry, then you might be excused from some of the experiences traditionally reserved for those people. But at every point in time, I feel like more than once I was sort of thinking, as a insert identity woman, how should I relate here?
Right.
Sometimes I'd go out and I'd want to order, for example, pizza, and I don't want them to put anything pork in it. So one time the guy was like, because I was like, please don't put anything pork in it. I don't want the grease. I don't want nothing. And he was like, are you vegetarian?
Yes, and I said, am.
Yes. Yes, I am vegetarian, because I just didn't know if it would be well received to say, I'm a Muslim, so don't put this in here. Another time, I just started saying I'm allergic. And if I get a drop of anything pork related, I'll fall down and convulse. So
yeah, that's my go-to.
Yeah, so that was sort of like a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Carlo?
Just to be open with you, like, I'm an introvert, so most of the time
just between us podcasts. Yeah.
So most of the time I either stayed in my dorm room or I attended those coffee chat events or go to class, or sometimes I would be out of the campus exploring the city on my own. One thing, but yeah, just this cultural difference part, I think. So I'm a Catholic, so I don't get that anti-Islam, that Islamophobia sentiment. I feel somewhat more at home in a way, because being Georgetown, being a Catholic university, there's a lot of Catholic life events. Although if you go outside, Catholicism is not the primary religion within in the US, so this marks a different experience for me, as I would say I would go back home to the Philippines, where we're a majority Catholic country. Other than that, like social life, one thing that I like the most about Americans is that they're generally nice. They're welcoming. Some of them might appear ignorant based on our standards on how they perceive, or like they think too highly of themselves relative to the world. But other than that, I found it very interesting. Like, it somewhat breaks this anti-American perspectives that are normally thrown out being from outside the U.S., although I know that certain things need to be changed, but certainly that helps break the that barrier, and we could work around it. One thing that I really like the most, or there's probably two things that I really like the most there, is that one, a lot of the civic engagement that people have. I remember being invited by one of my friends to take part in this tour on where they're basically advocating for change on something. And they showed us around, like, this, they were advocating for the restoration of this certain bridge near campus. And I remember going to that tour, taking us like, oh, this is what used to be the bridge, this used to be the history, and like, this is what we could do. This is something that, as a campus full of change, want to be change makers in the future, I think this is something that, like, this is where I can find that, you know, like, putting into practice what you learned.
Definitely.
And then another thing too that surprised me was the prevalence of parties out in the open. The thing for me is,
Doha kid goes to the wild and realizes.
Oh yeah.
People are allowed to party.
The thing for me is, like, I grew up here. My parents were pretty conservative. But I got here, like, oh damn, people actually party here. But in, like, the hotels and everything, it's in closed hotels or some closed spaces, right? So you don't normally see it out in the open. And even during the World Cup, it was pretty much, like, toned down.
Right.
But, like, going there to main campus, there's this one particular dorm that has parties every once in a while. And given that Georgetown Day is coming up, if you're on campus in spring and you want to party, go to Village A. Or, like, try to get a dorm in Village A, because I just heard from now, like, they're trying to restrict the entry to Village A for this year's Georgetown Day. So
I hear, though, that the parties in DC are lame. I bet the parties in Italy were much nicer. I don't know. Can you confirm?
Sometimes.
I'm, like, the worst person to ask about parties, because my kind of party is just going to a museum, and that's not everyone's taste, so. But, like, yeah, there's drinks, there's people dancing. It's, like, what the average part looks to me.
Right.
Mentally, so, yeah.
And now let's shift gears a little bit. How does your time in study abroad influence your views on global issues? For example, were there specific courses or professors that helped impact your thinking? I know, Carlo, that you touched upon that a little bit. Would you like to expand a bit more?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there, that class that I talked about, Foundation of Grand Strategy, that's not the only thing that changed my view. There's a lot of classes I took that were pretty interesting. Just to name one that's relevant to what I want to do after Georgetown, this is a class called Japan Search for Strategy. I didn't really enroll for it. Like, I enrolled for that class just during the ad drop week. I dropped another class. I took that class to replace that. But one thing that I liked about it was the fact that we're forced to engage with the readings that we're doing. So we would do the readings. We would have response papers, which is, like, somewhat typical of, like, what's present here in Georgetown, Qatar. But then we would be forced to debate on a topic. Like, you would pick a topic on which day you want to debate with your peers. And then it's not like just a passive, like you have people in the front debating. And if you're not debating, you can just sit in the back, do nothing. You're forced to engage. You need to like present a question and do that. That's something that we do at the start of the class. And then after that, we talk about news relevant to the topic. Like our topic was a class about Japan's foreign policy. So we're forced to come with something that we've read online or from the news within the past week, talk about it in class and like what the implications of it. So it's not just like you're focusing on a specific aspect of the class. You get to, or like specific aspect of the topic for each of the classes you take, you get to learn the case more intimately.
Right.
So one thing for me now is that I can say that I have relative familiarity with Japanese politics now. And this is something that I find useful for some of my classes here in Georgetown, Qatar. And for me as a Filipino, since the Philippines is trying to be closer, much closer to Japan given the current security situation in our region. So,
right. Yeah, makes sense. And what about you, Fatima?
Can you repeat the question again for me?
So how did your time and study abroad influence your view on global issues? And were there any professors or courses that kind of impacted that?
So my time in Italy was really a time for me to look inwards.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't thinking much about the world. I was thinking more about myself and the and my community and the kind of life I want to live. And I took two history courses. I took a course on travel writing in Italy, which is sort of we wrote a travel log every week, and we also read accounts from previous travelers to
mm-hmm.
Italy. I took a course on Italian cinema, just like, you know, talking about the Italian cinematic tradition and watching films. And something that really stood out to me across all my courses was sort of like the deep sense of historicity. Hey.
Look, it's my first time hearing that word.
A deep sense of having a history that pervades everything about Italy.
Right.
And, you know, many people would say that is Italy's magic. You go there and you feel like you've been transported in time. You go to Rome, you go to Florence. There's statues from like the Roman times, but then it also has this rich Renaissance tradition. It's just so distinctly Italian. And again, some people say it's the country's greatest asset. Other people say it's the country's greatest curse.
Mm-hmm.
But even I, an outsider, could feel the importance of having a clear, strong sense of who we are as a people and who I am as an individual.
Right.
Right. And I was always just thinking back about home. And I was like, I wish we had such a strong idea of our past, and our present identity mm-hmm. was very grounded in that, because I can see how that would contribute to making someone a more grounded, assured, confident person. It's like, yes, I come from this line. Yes, this is what right. my people have done. And I sort of realized that I don't have any of that.
Right.
I don't know the names of my great-grandparents. I don't know. I know my grandma's like, mama. I don't even know. It's horrible, but
I
don't even know her like name. I don't know what town their families emigrated from. Even my American friends who were there, they know where their great-grandparents came from before they went to like America and things like that. Like, I don't know what village they moved from before they moved to our present village, those kind of things.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, whoa, that there's this huge gap in my life. And I think in just general way, our societies function back home, where we do not give as much importance to history as we should.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just gave me a renewed appreciation for efforts amongst the people to preserve their history, because right. I think it's incredibly important to their sense of self in the present one, but also gave me a renewed sort of vigor towards pursuing my own personal history and storing that, because it's like, well, it's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So honestly, guys, it's been wonderful seeing how you've both adapted and grew from these experiences. And before we wrap up, could you each offer a piece of advice for students considering a study abroad? And actually, better yet, if you had the chance to do it over, would you choose the same location?
About the latter question, would I choose the same location? Yes, definitely. And just to go back to the previous question, that was definitely something that I felt during my time in DC. I didn't learn it from the classes I took, but like whenever I would go around Washington, DC with all the monuments. And I think that's one reason why I would want to go back to DC. There's a lot of things that when you're walking around, there's a lot of these experiences that you would feel, you would think, and reflect on that I never experienced when growing up here in Qatar or whenever I would visit the Philippines. Like, I find it, like, the design of the city more, it's more open for those kinds of experiences. As for the pieces of advice, I would like to go for the practical one. If you want to save a lot of money, try to learn how to do things yourself. Do not rely on like delivery apps. Do not try to like go for Uber. Try to use a public transport, or if better yet, learn how to walk and take walking shoes with you, or, like something that's good for you to hike up and down hills, because Georgetown, like after all, we call that place a hilltop, and it's not just they just slap the hill there. There's like a literal hill. It's actually built on top of a hill. So you need to learn how to walk up and down like steep locations. So you need to do that. Another advice to you on this general trend, learn, if you know how to bike, you're in good for you, because you could actually get a discount for the Capital Bike Share. So basically, instead of paying $90 a year, you pay only $25 for a yearly subscription. And what this gives you is that you have like unlimited 45-minute bike rides. So you basically can take a bike from this one spot, ride 45 minutes, park it, take another bike, and you have another free 45 minutes. If you compare that to like a normal Uber, where the minimum is $8, then you also have to pay taxes. You have to pay the tips. So that's going to balloon a lot, and you'll basically getting off your money's worth from that $25 that you've spent. So
definitely. So for our listeners, do things yourself. What about you, Fatima? What do you advise them?
I'd say, first of all, like, realize you're an adult and you don't have to be so scared, like, at your big age.
Like, right.
If you're going to go to Italy, don't go and spend the first 2, 3, 4 weeks, maybe 5.
Are you talking from experience?
I don't know. Don't spend it inside, scared of figuring things out. I want to go here, but it's far.
Right.
How am I going to do it?
Just do it.
Exactly. Get outside.
Right. Yeah.
Florence is very walking heavy. You can't even get an Uber, but you get used to it. I feel like there's something infantilizing about the way we experience university. We stay in the dorms. We don't have to think about how to remain there. We don't have to think about going shopping in the markets with the locals. We go to Carrefour. We go to Lulu. We take the tram to campus. We take the tram back to the dorms. We Uber to New Souk. And then we Uber back.
Right.
And I feel like it really prevents us from expanding our range of experiences to make us feel more competent as adults to do the things that we need to do by ourselves.
Right.
But also take ourselves to the places that we want to go without seeking permission from an institution to set it up for us. And it might not seem like an explicit thing, but somewhere in your brain, there's sort of that conditioning, especially if you do not have a lot of other avenues to sort of experience an adulthood. You're grown. When you go there, plan ahead of time for sure. If you want to travel, plan ahead of time. Don't be scared. Pick up the Google Maps. Figure it out. Go out during the day. Walk. Don't waste your time. It's very, very limited. I'd say as well, if you do not come from a wealthy financial background, you will be surrounded by a lot of wealth. The kind of which you might have never seen before. And you would need to plan ahead of time as to what your priorities are, so that you're able to budget your money and spend them in the places that will give you the most value for what, you know, what you want to experience. Otherwise, it's very easy to get caught in the flow and end up spending a lot more than you wanted to.
Right.
And also just to prepare yourself mentally. You're not going to be able to afford everything that your friends are doing, but that doesn't mean you cannot craft for yourself an authentic and enjoyable experience. Would I do it again? Yes, I would, but I would also go to DC. I think experiences are what we make of them. And I think wherever you go, you would have a fantastic time, as long as you were committed to having a fantastic time and you sort of made a plan as to how you want to go through the time there, as opposed to just letting the time fly by and then you get pulled to any direction by wherever the wind is blowing.
Right. And I want to thank you both, Carlo and Fatima, for your thoughtful and open responses. And also thanks everyone for tuning in. And I hope that these stories inspire more of you to explore the world through study abroad. So until next time, keep exploring and stay curious. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of GAQ Speaks. We hope you've gained valuable insights and inspirations from our conversation today. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow us on our Instagram page at GAQ_speaks, and be sure to leave a review on Spotify to show your support.